We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Joe, I think I totally forgot to ask you this yesterday, and I don't want to forget today. So I'm going to start off with it.
All right.
As random as it is, kind of, okay? Did you see Aaron Boone get ejected?
I did. Total BS. Holy cow.
He didn't say anything.
No, the fan.
It was amazing.
Did. I thought it was insane. You could hear the conversation.
Yes.
The mics were picking it up. And they're all yelling at the umpire after he throws out Boone. I didn't say anything. It was a fan. It was someone in the crowd. And then
right.
The umpire saying, I don't care. Like, wait, what do you mean
wow.
You don't care? Like, if it's true, and if you have someone to back up that it was a fan, then you just undo the ejection. That I don't know. That was crazy.
Right. It's like I've never seen an ejection rescinded, so you couldn't rescind it, right? I don't think
you
so.
You probably could. Well, why not?
I don't know.
Is someone going to get him
question.
In trouble? Like, you can do whatever you want. You're the head umpire. You can let him stay around.
Well, it was Henry Wendelstadt, I think that's how you say his name.
Okay.
The umpire. So he would have to know that Boone didn't say it. Boone can say all he wants. I didn't say anything.
Right.
But he'd have to know that to rescind it. And he might be thinking Boone's just saying he didn't say anything. But the way Boone reacted about the ump, I'm like, okay, I probably screwed this up, right?
Yeah.
But he was warned. He was warned, like, hey, shut up. Another word out of you, I'm tossing you. It was top of the first inning. And then all of a sudden, literally, he's just standing there. A fan behind Boone says something to the ump, and the ump tosses him, and Boone goes crazy. So it's wild. And then you have these breakdowns. Do you follow John Boy on Twitter at all? Do you know who John Boy is?
I do, but I don't know if I follow him.
Okay, John Boy, J-O-M Boy, John Boy. He's a Yankee fan. He does a lot of Yankee stuff, but really, really creative content creator. But also, one of the things he does a lot of is he reads lips. Not one of these like NFL reading lips where they put funny stuff in.
Right.
He literally breaks down and he's really good at reading lips. When there's a play in baseball and there's an argument, it's amazing watching him. He breaks it all down and says exactly what everybody said to each other. And you're like, holy cow. On this one, you didn't need John Boy. They even said on the broadcast, you don't need a John Boy one for this. There were mics right there. So I thought it was super interesting. I'm showing my wife like, oh my God, you got to see what happened to Aaron Boone. And then I show Max too. I'm like, this is one of those things where he's 10, and it's not like he's never heard bad words, but you also don't want to kind of promote them. And I'm like, okay, I need you to see this, but you need to know, like, there's going to be some swearing in here when he talks to the ump. And it was one of those, I really want him to watch it, but I kind of don't want him to hear it, but you have to hear it to get the full effect of what it is, right? So we were doing that, and so it made it a little bit tricky, but I had to ask you because
yeah,
I thought it was really It was hilarious, actually, to be quite honest. And, I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. It sucked for Aaron Boone to get ejected. He's had a lot of ejections. But that is that's something mm-hmm. I've never seen. And then rewatching it was kind of funny. It actually, it got me down the rabbit hole. I watched the one again with Terry Collins. You remember that one?
With the Mets? Yes. That's a famous one.
Oh, man.
So good.
Yes. The way these guys talk to each other when they're out there, it's just...
It's
amazing.
The best take I saw was that it would a funny Seinfeld bit if the show ever comes back, which obviously won't, would be if George was the fan that said something that got the manager ejected. And then the whole episode is based around everyone hating George because he got Aaron Boone ejected in a game.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I that would be pretty cool. It's the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Welcome in. It's Wednesday. We're a day before the NFL draft. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We are loaded today, Joe. We are absolutely packed. We have a lot going on today, and for good reason. I mean, there's so much happening in all of Buffalo sports, including yesterday, of course, the press conference with Lindy Ruff, introducing slash reintroducing him. I thought it was a really good point, Shopin the Bulldog made. Like, no one in the Sabres organization, the billboards, the social media posts, the website, no one's saying, welcome back, Lindy Ruff. It's just, welcome, Lindy Ruff. The wording from Kevin Adams to strongly say how much this is not about nostalgia, not about the past. This has been on-point messaging, right? They have made a concerted effort here, the Sabres, to make sure that they are not trying to promote it as we are bringing back Lindy Ruff. They are treating it really kind of like he's a new part of the organization who's never been a part, but we do recognize his history here, if that makes sense.
Yep. No, I think Adams almost seemed uncomfortable when both Pegula and Ruff were referencing the past. Now, some of that might have been that both of them, maybe Terry more than Lindy, was taking shots at his ring. You know, that's probably tough, right? It's probably uncomfortable where that's the achievement of your hockey life is winning that cup. And everyone in the place you're from and live thinks that you basically stole it from them, which is 06. But so maybe some of it was that. But every time the past came up, yeah, Adams really, I think, made it seem like he just didn't want that to be a part of the narrative, right? Even when Paul asked him about his time as an assistant coach, it was like, okay, yeah, it helps, but that's not really why we're here. Adams wanted to make that very clear.
Right, and I still believe that obviously Terry Pegula would, you know, he's the owns the team. He has a say in who the coach is going to be. He's going to have final approval, you know, with his relationship with Lindy when he got here, knowing his affinity for Lindy, that I'm quite sure that, you know, he is very much on board and wanted Lindy Ruff. I think that's where a lot of it is, hey, let's make sure we know. This isn't about that, though, and the messaging has been that. But also, it doesn't have to be bad that that's the case, because I understand that. And Mike said yesterday, and I agree, and I want to steal his thought on this, or I think it was Bulldog. Bulldog said this, and I agree with it. I want to give him credit for recognizing. I want to give the organization credit for recognizing, look, this is going to go over like this with a lot of people. A lot of people are going to think we're doing it just for this reason. We have to be aware of that, and we want to make sure they know that that's not the case. Even if they don't believe us, let's just make sure that we keep saying it, because that's what it feels like to me, that the messaging has been very clear, very on point, and very coordinated, that they are not saying we are welcoming back Lindy Ruff. We are just welcoming Lindy Ruff to the organization, but we all know the history there. The reason I say that we are loaded today, we got a lot to do. We're going to talk about Lindy Ruff. We're going to talk about yesterday's press conference. We're going to have New Jersey Devils reporter Ryan. Let me get his name right here. I want to make sure I say his name right. It is Ryan Novosinski. He writes for the Star Ledger in New Jersey. That's at 11:05. And we'll get more detail on Lindy Ruff and his time in New Jersey, get some insight there. After that, of course, Paul, he was at the press conference yesterday. He's going to kind of recap the things that he heard at that press conference from Lindy Ruff. By the way, I don't know if you heard it, but it was really great for our own Paul Hamilton. Lindy Ruff stepped up and said, the reason I came back, Paul Hamilton, Mike Harrington, I missed those guys. So that was pretty cool part of yesterday's conversation. At 10:30, bottom of the hour, Joe, Ryan Wilson of CBS. He is a colleague of Chris Trabasso at CBS Sports, cbssports.com. Ryan Wilson does fantastic work, and he has his latest mock draft. And I specifically reached out to Ryan to say, can you please come on the radio program with us today? Because Ryan Wilson has something that I think looks like a dream scenario for the Buffalo Bills. He has, in his mock draft, I'll spoil it and tell everybody, that's why we're going to have him on. He has Brian Thomas Jr. falling to 28. I can't see it happening, Joe. But in his mock, it does. So, here's a guy, national guy, not a Bills local person, beat reporter, fan, content creator, intentionally getting you there, right? Because you can do that sometimes with a mock draft. I really want to get this guy there, so how can I make it happen? He's not doing that for the Bills, as far as I know. he's doing what he thinks is going to happen in the draft. And he has Brian Thomas Jr. falling to 28. How realistic is that?
I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's something that I haven't seen other places. It's not normal. I don't see it often at all. But once in a while, I think Mel Kiper had a mock a couple of weeks ago where he had Thomas falling. So again, like, I could probably count on one hand the number of times that it's happened. But it happens sometimes. Some guys go later than you think. Some guys go higher than you think. And Thomas is a raw type of player who only ran a couple of routes in college and had bad numbers in the first 3 years of his career. Not the fourth. He was very good that year. But there's flaws there. So I'm not thinking it's nuts. I still don't think it's likely, though. I think that if Thomas is their guy, that they would be more likely to move up for him, even if you didn't have to. You know, like, Bean is someone that likes, if he likes his guy, and he said this, he said he likes to go to sleep at night with the guy he wanted, that even if Thomas was going to fall to 28, I might still believe that Bean would be willing to eliminate the risk of him going right in front of him by moving up two or three spots. You know what I mean? So, like, he could, I wonder if he could even fall to 28, because if he's Bean's guy, would Bean even let it get past pick 24, 25 right, without going up a couple spots?
Agreed.
And just, let me just ensure that this is going to happen.
I agree with that. I think, yeah, Bean himself kind of has control over this, if that's the case, right? Which is, well, he's not going to get to 28 because I'm going to make sure he doesn't get to 28 if you're Brandon Bean. Like, I got to go up and get him, because the longer you wait, the more chance there is for another team to go up and get him. And I think, you know, I don't know this for sure, but I think we have enough evidence that suggests that maybe that's what happened a couple of years ago with Kyrie Elam. That they really liked the corner from the Kansas City Chiefs they drafted. I'm sorry. Who's the corner they drafted in that draft? The Kansas City Chiefs.
Trent McDuffie.
Trent McDuffie, thank you.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of evidence here, and nobody's ever confirmed this. I don't have it confirmed, but I'm pretty sure this is the case as well. The Bills really like Trent McDuffie. But the longer Bean waited, what happened was the Chiefs got Trent McDuffie. So he's off the board. Now you take Kyrie Elam. And we all know how this has turned out so far. Trent McDuffie has become a really good player. Kyrie Elam can hardly get on the field for the Buffalo Bills. I look at that. I think about that. I also think about the year that Jalen Phillips was drafted. And I do think the Bills like Jalen Phillips. Now, it is a different scenario. I don't think they really had an appetite to trade to get as high as that might take to get Jalen Phillips. But it would have been nice. And the longer they waited, there's Jalen Phillips off the board to another rival, in this case, the Miami Dolphins. So the Bills take Greg Rousseau. They're perfectly happy with taking Greg Rousseau. This is part of the reason, Joe, what you just said is right. That I think this year, Brandon Bean thinks about that and says, I'm not going to risk the guy I really like getting to somebody else. I got to make the move. I got to be aggressive. And I think that's why he drafted for Dalton Kincaid last year. Dalton Kincaid last year. The talk was, he's going to Dallas. Like, Dalton Kincaid is going to Dallas. I think we all kind of know that was going to happen. So you know what Bean did? He said, I'm not letting that happen. I got a trade scenario here. I can move down,
right,
get capital that I really like. He said it, but I can't let that happen. That's my guy. I'm going to get him. That is exactly how I think this has to play out. If he's going to think about getting a guy. He's got to have a guy, though, right? It can't be, right, I want to go to 20 to see who's there. It's, I got to have a guy to make this happen.
Well, and he can't have more than a couple guys, right? Like, if he thinks there's no difference between, or not a big difference between, Brian Thomas, Xavier Legette, and Adonai Mitchell. He likes them all. The body types are all similar. The skill sets are all similar. They've checked all the boxes with their characters and their meeting rooms, and they might prefer one over the other, but it's not really a big difference to them. And if they look at all three of them and think, well, we're four picks away, you know, and we are good with one of the three, then they don't move. And then maybe that's how you get Brian Thomas at 28, is if they think that highly of other players. But it's also very possible, you can see a lot of draft analysis this way, that, well, Legette's older, and he never did it against guys that he wasn't 3 years older than. So if the Bills think that's a red flag and have him marked a little bit lower, then you could drop him from where Brian Thomas is. And if Adonai Mitchell has big character questions, which has been a thing about him all offseason that the Bills don't like, then maybe he's not even on their board, let alone someone that they might mark lower. And if those two guys don't compare to a Brian Thomas, then that to me is when they move up. That to me is, this guy fits, this guy doesn't have the red flags that the others do, and we are going to go get him. So I think there is a, it's you play the draft, right? You play the board, you make the board work for you, and Bean is someone that has very often done that. And I would not be surprised at all. In fact, right now, I would predict it's their most likely outcome is that they will do some form of trade up, or they at least will try to, and go get Brian Thomas.
I agree with that. I think it's at least a trade up, and that would be the most likely target. I'm not completely dismissive of the notion that they could trade all the way up to get Roma Dunze. I do think it's hard, of course. It's really hard, and I don't know if he'll be able to do it. I am not, like I said, dismissing him thinking about it, trying to do it, seeing what the cost is. I think that would be the dream scenario for the Bills, the player at least, the Roma Dunze. Another, another mock draft is out from the 33rd team. Do you follow the 33rd team?
Yes.
It's a really good website where they have like a lot of former GMs and front office people. There's a mock draft from one of their writers at the 33rd team. I'll get the name here if I can. And it's interesting because the first thing you do is you scroll to the Bills. They have the Bills taking Adonai Mitchell. I'm like, okay, well, who's on the board? What's interesting about this draft for me is Adunze's off, obviously. Brian Thomas then goes to the Colts at 17. And then Xavier Worthy's actually taken already off the board before it gets to the Bills. So now you're talking about, okay, who do you go with if four guys are off the board and they have Xavier Worthy? So Xavier Worthy is the player that I have the Bills taking in my mock draft. Now, full disclosure, just so everybody knows, I do think the Bills would like to trade up, and I do think it's more likely. But in my mock, I don't have them trading because I don't do a mock with trades. I just think it's too hard to really figure that out. I mean, we could talk about all the scenarios. What I like to do for my mock is just keep everything straight, 32 picks, and then say, okay, most teams are going to pick where they're slotted anyway, so let's see how we do here. But I do think the Bills will try to trade up. But if they are in that situation where they're sitting there at 28, they can't find a trade partner, I have them taking Xavier Worthy. I'd like to hear what people think about that. 803-0550, if you want to give us a call, 803-0550 here on the Extra Point Show. By the way, it's the 33rd team. It's Ian Valentino is the person who wrote this. Okay, Joe, if they're there, all four are gone. We're talking about the top two guys, Adunze and Brian Thomas.
Yep.
I have Worthy. I explain why. Ball in his hands, rack. We've heard this all year. Explosive plays, 4-2-1, 40-yard dash. What do you think? Is that the guy? If that was the guy, how would you feel about that as the next guy and the Bills saying, we're doing that at 28?
I could definitely be sold on it. I could definitely be talked into it as a very good idea in that you pointed out right. The explosive play comment from McDermott, how they were lacking last year down the field, and what some of their other skill sets are, which Samuel, Shakir, Kincaid, Cook, it's a lot more of the middle of the field stuff. And I think a field stretcher is someone that they're definitely missing. And the fact that he runs the fastest 40 time we've ever seen, you know, it shouldn't be thought of as crazy that team that's talked that way and was missing that component would be chasing that. The thing that I think I would need to be sold on, and this would maybe be a Joe Brady question, is how are you going to make it all work? Because he might have that extra element of the nine routes, the down the field element when he lines up on the outside, but a lot of the other stuff that he did at Texas was Curtis Samuel stuff. They would use him in creative ways, they would bring him in motion, give it to him on a reverse, screen passes. He would play out of the slot doing a lot of that, and I think that there's some overlap there, which is fine, right? Because even though those plays might be overlapping, I think they are very different players. They might both have that yak ability, but Worthy is not going to break a tackle, maybe ever, right? He's going to try to run around you. He's going to just use his sheer speed. Samuel has speed too, but he can also run through. He's built like a running back and can shed off tacklers that way. So that would be my question. How are you going to make it all work? Because Worthy, he's not he's not a Diggs replacement, and he's not a Gabe Davis replacement. So it's another different type of player that you would be incorporating in your offense, which, again, I think can be a good thing, but it would be so new for me that I would just... It would be one of those where I feel like I'd really want to see it in action before I knew that, okay, yeah, this is going to work.
I have Xavier Worthy to the Bills at 28. What do you think about that, Bills fans? 803-0550. We can get connected with you. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. You can also tweet us at Sal Sports, at Sneaky Joe Sports. I've had pretty positive feedback on Worthy from fans. There have been detractors, of course, and the number one reason is his size.
Yeah.
He's 165 pounds. Like, how are you going to really have him as a high-volume guy? Well, I totally respect that point. Like, I think it is a fair point. But I think we're living in a different age in the NFL, right? I mean, you're not taking such a beating at that position like you used to because of a lot of the rules. Also, he has been a high-volume guy at Texas. Go look at his numbers.
Yeah.
He touches the ball a lot in a lot of different ways, and he doesn't have to be on the field all the time. You have other. I think the way Joe Brady's going to operate, to your point earlier, is to have all these different options, all these different ways. And the thing that really gets me over the edge on him is he's a punt returner. He might be the best punt returner in all of college football. And right now, the Bills don't have a true, legit punt return threat on their roster. They have punt catchers, guys who can do it, guys who you're okay with. Khalil Shakir could be back there. They don't have that kind of guy, though.
Yeah. The weight is a good question. You point out like how the league has changed. The guy that I'm thinking about a little bit for this that has been a high volume target as a very small player is Tyler Lockett. Lockett is about 10 pounds bigger than Worthy. But I don't know what he came into the league at listed at. Lockett's 10 pounds bigger at age 32. What was Lockett at 23? I don't know. I could look. But
I thought you were going to say?
Who?
Devontae Smith. He's five pounds heavier.
Yeah. He's very light. And
he had 81 catches last year, 95 the year before that.
Right, and the targets are over 100 for him. That's what I was looking for, because Lockett has been over 100 targets 5 years in a row, playing at a smaller size. Both of those guys, Lockett even more so, these are guys that do not take big hits, right? Lockett will slide sometimes. Smith, I've never seen do that, but I know he doesn't take big hits. So there are ways around, you know, can you be a high-volume target and that. I might think the bigger question about can he be like a true number one day is the full route tree, and can you play out at the X position. Press coverage is a bit of a question for Worthy that I think Smith at least doesn't have. Lockett might. So I think there are question marks about his ability as a number one. But he's so fast that, you know, like what's the floor? The floor, I mean, there are speed guys that don't work, but it does feel like he's a guy where even if it doesn't work to the exact degree that you'd like it to, he's going to be someone that makes an impact for you. It's almost hard to not make an impact with that level of speed, even if it's as a gadget guy, even if it's as a secondary pass catcher and just not the focal point. So to me, there is some safety. It's not total boom or bust for Worthy if he doesn't become your number one. I will say, though, on Worthy, I would bet right now he's not going to be there. I mean, he's there in a lot of mocks. This mock that you mentioned from the 33rd team, he goes at 17. And if there was a draft prop that I would want right now, if I could bet it, but you can't in New York State, it would be Worthy to go higher than what his over-under is. Because every
What if the Bills traded up to get him?
That's possible, too. Right, they could be that team. He went, what, 17th in this mock? Could the Bills trade to the late teens and draft Worthy? Like, I wouldn't be floored by that. Mm. I just think every year there is a guy that goes a lot higher than we all think he does. And at the receiver position, very often that's the guy with the elite speed. All it takes is one. 31 teams could all agree that Xavier Worthy's a late first, early second round pick. But all it takes is that one owner or one general manager that goes, yeah, but you know, this is the fastest player we've ever seen in the NFL draft. I'm going to take him at 12. Like, it only takes one guy to do that.
You know, one of the things that has been tweeted at me after this is, well, don't fall in love with the fast guy. Look at all the fast guys who bust out, like John Ross. And I get that. I mean, That's what we've seen a lot in the NFL. Guy's really fast. We're going to draft him. But this guy's a little different to me. He has production. He's been a high-volume guy. He can play wide receiver. He does have a little bit of inconsistency with drops, and that does scare me, no doubt about it. So I don't want to just focus on Worthy. I don't think necessarily it has to be him. But sure, there are anybody you pick. I mean, I've had people pick apart Brian Thomas to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ross, by the way, can I just throw something out on him? Because I do hear that comparison a lot. I'm going to trust Joe Goodberry on this, who we've had in the station a lot, covered the Bengals for a long time, lives locally. I've heard Joe Goodberry multiple times defend Ross as a bust, as he just had total injury problems. Like, he was not going to be a bad player. Maybe not worth a top 10 pick. I think he had 1 year, I think his 19 season, I'm pulling up his stats now. Yeah, his 2019 season, he only played 8 games. He was on pace for 112 targets, 56 catches, 1,000 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Like, he was going to have that year, and he got injured again. Like, even that guy, maybe it would have been different had he just not been injured. And, like, Ruggs, I know, had the, of course, he's in jail right now. That's a whole totally different situation. So you can't really indict his career on the field. It's just Darius Heyward-Bey. That one was a bust. That guy was a bust. That was like 18 years ago now. So I don't want to just declare that all the fast guys are always busts. I think there are different situations that have really played into why they haven't hit.
Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports has Brian Thomas Jr. falling all the way down to the Bills at 28, and the Bills snatch him up right there. We'll get with Ryan when we come back. We'll hear his thoughts, his mock draft at CBSSports.com, and what else could be an option for the Bills. We'll do that when we come back here. Thanks for being with us. It's one day before the NFL draft on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Daniel stands tall.
Brian Thomas Jr. We will get Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports in just a few moments, and then he will tell us how he has Brian Thomas Jr. falling all the way down to 28. That would be a really great scenario for the Bills. I agree with you, Dio. I just don't know if they could do that. Now, the other scenario, we've talked about trade up. There's a report they're trying to trade up. Walter Football was on that. Trading down too is a scenario where I thought I saw Seth Walder talk about this. I'm fine if they want to trade down and grab a Xavier Leggett, a Ladd McConkey, and a Ricky Pearsall. There are a lot of options, right? That's what I love about this type of really kind of good conundrum, I guess, because you almost can't go wrong if you grab one of these guys. Mm-hmm. And the question is how you do it with the value. This is about value now.
Yep. The value too, like I saw that from Seth Walder, like, it would be optimal. Move down to 35. Look at Leggett could still be there, and it has a good chance of still being there. I do not mind trading down. I mind trading down if I don't get a third round pick. What do I need another day three pick for? Right. I've already got 9 of them. I already have questions of whether 10 rookies are going to make the active roster. If I add a fourth, I don't know. I feel like I've already got multiple fourths. I've got multiple fifths. I don't see the need for it unless it's a third. If you get a third, which you don't have, then I do think that would sound like a good idea.
Joining us now on the Wester Hotline, Ryan Wilson of CBS and CBSSports.com. He has a mock draft up, which I think is a dream scenario for the Bills, and that is for Brian Thomas Jr. to fall all the way down to 28, and the Bills grab him right there. Good morning, Ryan. It's Sal and Joe here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, guys. I'm right down the street, by the way. I'm in Connecticut now for work, but I live in Syracuse, so I'll wave at you
love
guys
it.
Next time I drive by.
Nice.
I love it. Well, maybe finally, Ryan, over the next few years, we can talk about some Syracuse prospects in the draft again. It's been a little while since we've been able to do that.
Fingers
but
crossed.
I really like what Coach Brown is doing and some of the talent he's bringing in. In the meantime, all right, so you know these exercises, these mock drafts, you know, you do your mock draft, I do one. Sometimes, especially locally, you can kind of get yourself to a guy you want to get to, right? You're not doing that here. You're trying to do the best you can for you know, every team and their pick. And yet you have Brian Thomas Jr. down at 28. We're debating how likely that could be, but I guess it is likely. Tell us a little bit about your thought process for him to actually be available at 28 for the Bills.
Yeah, I was sort of surprised too. This was what I would do if I were making the picks for all 32 selections in the first round. And by the time I got to 28, I was surprised to see Brian Thomas Jr. still there. But he just fell because they're going to be needs a quarterback. The top three wide receivers are going to go probably top 10 to 12. And then you start to get that run on the defensive side of the ball, the edge rushers, Byron Murphy, and maybe even, Johnny Newton slipping their defensive tackle and then all the cornerbacks. And then by the time you get to 25, 26, 27, those teams, if Arizona already has their wide receiver four, they're not a team to worry about at 27. And, there is Brian Thomas Jr. sitting right there. And the interesting thing about Brian Thomas Jr., I'm sure you guys have talked about him a lot, is that right now he's a vertical threat. He's, you know, ran the 4.3s. He's an enormous target. He's more dynamic than Gabe Davis was when he was in Buffalo. And he has huge amounts of upside with the athleticism, just oozing potential. He doesn't run a lot of short and intermediate routes. And, you know, that's something obviously he can get better at. But I think right away he comes in as just a home run threat, whether it's deep balls with Josh Allen or red zone capability. Is he going to be there at 28? It feels like a stretch because, again, this is what I would do. But the other thing is the wide receivers last year didn't start going off the board until 20, and then they went four in a row. Now, this class is much deeper at the top than last year's class. But if I had to put odds on this or percentage chance, I think Brian Thomas is there. It's probably less than 40%, but, you know, there's still an opportunity for that to actually happen. But it does feel like sort of a long shot given how – there are some needs above that perhaps the Jets, for example, instead of taking Brock Bowers, maybe they go with a wide receiver. But so a couple things have to fall into place for Buffalo. And you know, perhaps there's a chance of Brian Thomas Jr. sitting there.
Does him falling maybe also have to have one of the other top receivers go higher than expected, whether that's Mitchell or I think Worthy's being mocked more and more higher because I just said this, Ryan, last segment that – all it takes is one GM to fall in love with a guy who broke the combine record, and suddenly he's going 10 picks higher than we all thought.
Yeah, when I talk to teams, they like Xavier Worthy a little more than media folks do, and by that I mean he's probably going to crack the first round. And to your point, a 4-2-1, that gets your attention. And you talk about John Ross previously having the record. He's a completely different player, Xavier Worthy is, than John Ross. He's for 165, he is incredibly tough. He can bounce off tackles. He can actually run through arm tackles. He had some focus drops last year, but those aren't concerning for me. I think he can be special. And again, when you're causing this sort of havoc, wreaking this sort of havoc in the secondary with that blinding speed that Xavier Worthy brings, that makes an offense like Buffalo that much more dynamic. And, you know, you can say, well, maybe he's not worth the first round pick. And then I always come back, well, let's see what he looks like on the 49ers. Or on the Chiefs, and let's come back and revisit that conversation because, you know, like we talk about the quarterback, fit matters. And what Xavier Worthy possesses, very few people and no one in the history of the NFL combine possess that sort of speed. And yes, he's undersized, but I think, like I said, he plays like he's 20, 25 pounds heavier than what we saw when he stepped on the scale and was 165.
Ryan, he's the guy I have in my mock going to the Bills, Xavier Worthy, that is, at 28, because I keep having this voice, these voices in the back of my head whenever I do this, of Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott continually talking about explosive plays and rack all offseason. That's what they talked about. We need explosive plays. We need rack. And Sean McDermott talking about how defenses have changed to, yeah, if you can beat them over the top, great. But you know what? Get the ball to your playmakers because they're allowing you to do that underneath. And look, and the guy's also a punt returner, one of the best in college football. They need something like that. All right, but let's say it's not Worthy. Give me another guy, a receiver, who would fit the mold of, you know what, you can get explosive plays from this guy, good with the ball in his hands. Maybe you don't have to take him at 28, but he would fit the Bills' offense from that standpoint.
Yeah, so A.D. Mitchell is going to be, I'm sure you guys talk about him a lot as well. Xavier's teammate out of Texas. He's physically, he looks a lot like Brian Thomas Jr. I think he's a little more dynamic as a route runner right now. And he's also a 4-3 guy. I think it feels like all these guys are 4-3 guys at this point.
Yeah.
Huge target, and you know he can make plays down the field, contest the catch situations, but he can run those short and intermediate routes with a little more wiggle than Brian Thomas Jr. currently does, just because he wasn't asked to do it a lot. And the other name that I keep going back to, and it's funny you mentioned Xavier Worthy as just speed kills. I love Ladd McConkey. He is the best route runner in this class. I was talking to wide receivers coach the other day about how good he is in small areas and how he can create separation. Just again, you can line him up against anyone, and he's going to find ways to get open. It doesn't matter the route he's running. The issue is that he's under 6 feet. He's 189, so he weighed at the combine, and he has an injury history. And the questions around the league whether he's a slot only guy. I don't think he is. I've seen him on the outside stack defensive backs in the SEC consistently at find ways to get open on vertical routes. And you talk about runaway speed. You know, you throw these sort of runaway routes, whether it's overs or deep posts or whatever, and then he gets underneath it, and that's a wrap. You're not going to catch him. And I think in that offense in Buffalo with someone like Josh Allen, able to get him the ball from all sorts of arm angles and you know various points in the play, whether it breaks down or whether it's on time, it just feels like he's going to hit the ground running. Because with the Brian Thomas Jr., you're helping him grow into what it means to be an NFL wide receiver and do all the things that NFL wide receivers need to do. With Ladd McConkey, you're just saying, oh, go out there and do what you did in Georgia, and we should be in pretty good shape.
Is Diggs a good comparison for him? For McConkey, like maybe not doesn't have to be as good as Diggs, but I don't know, just the way the route tree stuff and getting open, and when Diggs was younger, especially he had more vertical speed. Like, is that close for a good comparison?
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think Diggs maybe ran through a little fewer more arm tackles. My comp for Ladd when I was watching him in the fall, Emmanuel Sanders kept coming to mind, and I think Stephon's probably a little bit bigger than Emmanuel, and probably Ladd too, but they're close. And I think if you're getting that sort of dynamism, and I think that's what Ladd brings after moving on from Stephon Diggs, it's not going to be an upgrade over Stephon Diggs because we know who Stephon Diggs is, even if his game isn't what it once was 2 or 3 years ago or whatever. But I think Ladd has a chance to step right in. Like I said, you know, you talk about the 49ers offense and the Chiefs offense, the Bills offense is right there too. You put someone in that offense and suddenly things start to click. And, you know, we talk about this with Josh when Stephon first arrived, and you can talk about with Tua and Tyreek or Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow. When you get a big play wide receiver, it helps your franchise quarterback elevate his game as well. Everything's not on him. So in terms of ready to play right now, Ladd is my favorite, unless, you know, somehow Marvin Harrison Jr. falls to 28. But the other guys, you're banking on the productivity and the size and the speed and all the things that, you know, made your heart stop when you watched them last fall in college.
Ryan Wilson, by the way, CBS Sports, joining us on the Wester Hotline. There's been a lot of smoke about the Bills maybe looking to trade up, and I do think that that's very possible. In fact, I think it's most likely scenario that they actually trade up. Brandon Bean has a history of it. 4 out of the last 6 drafts, he's traded up to get his guy, including last year with Dalton Kincaid. All right, the dream guy would be Rome Odunze. That would take a Julio Jones type of trade, as we know, from 2011 when they moved up to get Julio. But what is the... what is the lowest he would go? Like, from what you're hearing, talking with teams, how much could he possibly fall where the Bills finally say, we got to do it and strike? What's the floor for him?
If he gets outside of the top 10, I'll be pretty surprised. I've heard the Jets are leaning offensive tackle as we sit here right now, so maybe they're not going to be in on the Rome Odunze, Brock Bowers thing. But I think a team at 8, the Falcons could trade out of 8, and the team could come up and get Rome there. The Bears are going to consider Rome. I know they're thinking either defense or perhaps a wide receiver there after they take Caleb. So if he gets to 9 and the Bears don't take him, then I think you need to fire up the trade machine, because I wouldn't feel comfortable waiting too much longer, because by that point I would imagine the Vikings will be gone out of 11 to move up for their quarterback. The same could be the case with the Denver Broncos. And then you're starting to play with fire if you're thinking 14, 15, 16. Because I think a team either just in front of or maybe just behind the Bills might think about having those same conversations with Rome Odunze. So it feels like 8, 9, 10 is the sweet spot, and that's where you might want to make your move.
Ryan, so you got anything else on the Bills before we do anything on the rest of the draft and ask Ryan a couple questions?
If they were to trade down to round two, Ryan, like, is there, let's assume, like, your mock had Thomas gone, of course, by round one, McConkey and Mitchell. Coleman, I think you had early in round two. Coleman's, the Legettes, like, what do you like for them if they were to move down, try to get a third-round pick, say, like, 10, 15 spots in the second round? Like, do you still like what would be available to them at receiver?
Yeah, and you mentioned Keon Coleman. I don't know if he goes as high as 33. He ran that 4.61 at the combine, but he plays a lot faster than that. And I was talking to some folks in the league about him, and they said, number one, he just turned 21, like maybe a month ago. Number two, he's a basketball player, hasn't played a lot of football. Number three, if you go back and watch the Michigan State tape before he transferred to Florida State, he runs NFL-style routes there. He wasn't asked to do that at Florida State. And in doing watching those, you see that he has the ability to get open, create separation, which was a concern with him because he's a huge target. And I think he provides some of that Gabe Davis-like playmaking ability. I don't think he's a number one, at least right away, but he's an option there. Ricky Pearsall is getting a late push here, but he's a really good route runner. He ran 4.41. I didn't think he played quite that fast, but he has the ability to get open on short intermediate routes and have these runaway routes. And then someone like Roman Wilson, perhaps he's too close to Khalil Shakir, but he's a slot guy who plays bigger than his 5'10 frame. And then he's, if the ball's in his hands, it's over. Like, you're not going to catch him. Those are some options there. I think Xavier Legette, the concern when you talk to teams about Luke Xavier is that he's a one-year productivity guy, so you want to make sure he can do it. I remember a couple of years ago, Jalin Hyatt, maybe it was even last year, Jalin Hyatt came out of Tennessee after that big year for Tennessee and didn't quite do as much as perhaps the Giants were hoping. Doesn't mean he won't, but just something to keep in mind when you talk about taking these guys top 30, top 40. But I think Xavier Legette, his size, his speed, his playmaking ability is certainly attractive, especially if you're talking round two instead of round one.
All right, Ryan, it looks like and feels like it's going to be Williams, then Daniels, the top two guys, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels at quarterback. Your mock reflects that. What happens after that? What are you comfortable kind of going with, if anything at all? How many different scenarios are there from Drake May at number three to somebody coming up and the Patriots moving down, number five, the Vikings? Like, what starts to happen at quarterback after that, do you think?
I'm very uncomfortable after the first two picks in terms of trying to predict what's going to happen. I think that the Vikings are going to make a real move to try to get the three, because I think they like Drake better than J.J. McCarthy. And then if they get three, are the Patriots just punting on quarterbacks this year? Are they going to try to stockpile picks and rebuild the roster and revisit the quarterback later? And then at four, I think there's an opportunity for another team to trade up, whether it's Denver or some other team, to come up and get J.J. McCarthy. So we could have a situation where four quarterbacks are the first four picks. And it's incredibly exciting now, but then you think back a few years, you know, Mac Jones is now in Jacksonville. Zach Wilson's just been traded to Denver. So it's hope springs eternal, but the reality is that these guys probably have them will maybe work out. And then after that, we'll see. I think there may be a lull as other players get picked. And then I think Michael Penix Jr. is going to get drafted in the first round. He's just too good not to. I've talked to teams that think he's a second-round pick, and you know the qualifier is that's great value. And I'm like, well, if that's great value, just take him in the first round because we know what he can do pushing the ball down the field. But maybe he's a middle to bottom of the first half quarterback. And then the question becomes, who's looking at him? Is that a situation where the Patriots are interested in taking him in the middle of the first round, or maybe a sleeper team? I've heard the Seahawks have been sniffing around Michael Penix Jr., who's offensive staff, part of it, is in Seattle now from Washington. So this is going to be a fun draft because there's so many unknowns and there's so many good players where in years past we've had a handful of good players and a lot of questions where it's just like there's a ton of guys here that could help these teams right away.
I have the Broncos and Raiders at 12 and 13, one or the other, Ryan, going Penix and Nix. I just don't know which one. It would feel like Penix would be first, but I feel like both those teams might really want a quarterback.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Jaden Daniels wants to play in Vegas from what I've heard and what's been reported. I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't think that's feasible just in terms of the lack of draft capital to move up. I don't know if Bo Nix is going to find his way into the first round. I've heard mostly second, third round grades when I've talked to teams about him. But, you know, we just talked about it. It only takes one. If you're talking Xavier Worthy or Bo Nix, do you have a chance to get drafted in the first round if the team really likes you? And I do wonder, what Vegas does if they don't get a quarterback, right? Because now you're in a division where if Denver gets J.J. McCarthy, all the other teams in that division have either franchise quarterbacks or a rookie first-rounder that they like a lot, and you have Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, and it's sort of hard to compete like that. So they have to figure that out as well, because maybe that informs their decision to how much they want to give up if they really love Jaden Daniels. But I don't know on what planet they're going from 13 to 2, because from what I understand, mm-hmm. Washington is all in on Jaden.
All right, Ryan. Awesome stuff. We really appreciate it. I think Bills fans would be very, very happy if your mock draft came to fruition. CBS Sports, you can follow him on Twitter, at Ryan Wilson CBS. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Thank you, guys.
You got it. Ryan Wilson right there from, as he said, just down the street. Is Syracuse just down the street, Joe?
Yeah.
When he said just down the street, I thought maybe he was talking like the Elmwood Village.
I was also expecting that, but that's fine. That's fine. It's down the street, just a couple hours.
One street, right? The 90. All right, yeah. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. When we come back, after a brief timeout after that, we're going to have Ryan Novosinski. He covers the New Jersey Devils for the Star-Ledger, New Jersey. We'll talk about Lindy Ruff, yesterday's press conference. Paul Hamilton joins us at 11:30. Still got a little bit to get to here, though, in the first hour in the Extra Point Show. Joe, you remember those days where you got those half days of school? My son has a half day of school today because of parent-teacher conferences.
Yep. I never knew what they were for. So. Yeah, it was always parent-teacher conference. Right.
That's pretty much
or staff day, something like that for teachers, right?
And then, yeah, that's tomorrow. Like, literally, like, yeah. You know. Yeah, hey, when I was a kid, I pretended to be sick to watch the NFL draft. My son doesn't even need that. They're actually off tomorrow.
Nice. Perfect. The draft anyway. Maybe they did it on purpose.
Maybe. Who knows? It should be the next day be off, though. The Bills, if they pick at 28, we're talking the 11 p.m. hour. Is when the pick will probably come into play. So we'll have full draft coverage for you. Of course, we're doing it all week, but you know, when the draft starts, we'll be on top of it. And I'll be down at the stadium chiming in. Who's that? Nate, right? Nate and Derek and
Zach will be involved. Yeah.
Zach. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to leave anybody out, but we're going to have full coverage for you right here on WGR Sports Radio 550. The NFL draft tomorrow night, round one begins Friday night, rounds 2 and 3 all day Saturday. It will be a long weekend and a fun weekend for Bills fans to see who is added to the 2024 Buffalo Bills roster. In the meantime, yesterday, Lindy Ruff introduced and reintroduced as the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. Ryan Novosinski has covered Lindy Ruff. We know a lot about Lindy, of course, but we really don't know a lot about him the last few years when he was in New Jersey, ultimately fired by the New Jersey Devils earlier this year. Well, Ryan's covered him for the Star-Ledger, so we'll get with him after this timeout. Ryan Novosinski, and then we'll have Paul Hamilton at the bottom of the hour recapping yesterday's press conference. A lot going on here in Buffalo with Lindy Ruff, the NFL draft. We're going to have Ryan Novosinski talk about Lindy Ruff from the New Jersey angle after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
This team is so similar to where we were at back then. Deep with talent. We needed to play the game the right way. And again, I'm going to reference the discipline in the game. Not all players are going to be the same. But understanding your role inside the team and executing your role will help the team win. We were deep, like 3-4 lines deep. We were 3 lines deep, and then I had two or three really good useful tools that we could lean on people with.
So that's Lindy Ruff yesterday down at KeyBank Center, his introductory press conference, returning as head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. There were a lot of comparisons made to when he first, took over, I should say later on, some of the teams he had in Buffalo, some of the younger teams when they came up. He said, out of the lockout, the 05 lockout, Joe, there were also, Joe, references to the Devils team that he's coached the last couple of years mm-hmm. and how the talent there and the speed and the offense. I thought that was really interesting from Lindy that he made that comparison. And joining us right now on the Western Hotline to talk about Lindy's time in New Jersey, he writes for the Star-Ledger in New Jersey, covers the Devils, Ryan Novosinski. Ryan, it's Sal and Joe here in Buffalo. Did I say your last name right, Novosinski?
You said it all right, my man. Thank you guys for having me. I'm sure you guys are feeling very nostalgic in Buffalo today, in this week.
Mm-hmm. We are. It's a really good word. We've talked about that a lot ever since this might have even been percolating. And there's a lot of different kind of ways to look at it here, Ryan, which is I'm generally one who says I'm tired of Buffalo teams trying to reach back to the past to reclaim something, like when Marv Levy was hired as general manager, you know, in the mid-2000s and bringing Ted Nolan back to coach the team. But Lindy is different, right? Lindy, first of all, I grew up watching him as a team captain a long time ago. I'm older. And then he was a coach for a lot of the heyday of the team. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals, obviously. But also, he had some success in New Jersey recently, Ryan. I mean, you've seen him firsthand. What did you see from Lindy as a coach, his style, more than anything, with the Devils over the last few years?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, this is why I think that, you know, you see the firing and you say, oh, man, like that's definitely a retread and there had to be some red flags there. I actually like the hire for Buffalo. Listen, rough system, in many ways, he sold out for offense a little bit. Big on puck possession and zone entries. And, you know, he had the players to do it with the guys like Jack Hughes, you know, Nico Hischier and Jesper Bratt. But when you with what was the downfall pretty much for this Devils team this year was you had young defensemen. You had Luke Hughes, you had Shimon Nemitz, both of who are sub 21 years old, 20 years old. You had them playing big minutes. And, you know, then you had their counterparts, their defenseman pairs, they had massive regressions. I mean, you know, you look at a guy like Jonas Siegenthaler, a guy like John Marino on this Devils team, they had massive regressions this year. You know, they didn't play quite to the skill that they usually do. And when you're playing in sort of an overload style in the defensive zone and, you know, really looking forward to spring it up through the neutral zone and get back into the O zone, which, you know, Lindy's brand is, it's not really a good recipe. I mean, it was prone to breakdowns. You saw it every single play. It seemed like one way or another, there was always going to be a breakdown. Now, you know, they had some luck sometimes and they had more veteran defensemen the previous year. And I think that's, you know, a reason why they had all their success. But I mean, you look at this Buffalo team, I think they have the pieces there, much like New Jersey, where Lindy can thrive. And I think quite frankly, as it stands right now, a little more seasoning to some of those young defensemen there in Buffalo to where I think that this is can be a really good hire. I mean, you know, Lindy kind of had the misfortune of not having great goaltending either. So that really was all of these things a part of his downfall in New Jersey. And, you know, with the tandem they have in Buffalo, or I guess the triad they have in Buffalo, I think that that this could work out pretty well.
Yeah, so basically, Lindy, like last year, the Sabres were the third highest team in the league in scoring, and the Devils were fourth, but they were almost 75 goals different in how many they gave up. So would you imagine that what basically Lindy had last year in New Jersey is, like, if he could create a carbon copy of what he had, that would be his goal?
Yeah, I no doubt. I mean, you want to have – if you are a really strong, really fast, run-and-gun offensive team, it's going to make for some fun hockey, you know, regardless of the results. But I think the results – like, I'm leaning more towards – because, as I mentioned, the goaltending is strong in Buffalo. I mean, he said it yesterday, UPL, that's his goalie there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you, if Levi has kind of a resurgence there under Ruff, I think you're going to see more. I'm leaning more towards 2022-23 Devils than I am 23-24 Devils, in which, you know, there was a bunch of different factors. I mean, there was the injuries, of course. There was, you know, the like I mentioned, the young defenseman kind of tuning in and the goaltending issues, which were, I mean, ran rampant in New Jersey. His second year, I believe, or maybe his first year, he spun through seven different goaltenders. And, you know, between all those factors, I mean, this year you saw even at full strength, though, this team kind of just wasn't responding to it. I think there was just a perfect storm of kind of misfortunes, if you will, that it was just time. And quite frankly, I mean, it probably should have been time a little bit before then. But between all these things, and Lindy was pretty candid about it in the press conference yesterday, just saying, you know, he saw during that Ducks game, it was, you know, I think two games before he got fired, he was like, yeah, maybe this isn't the year for me. But again, with the players that Buffalo has, I think they can all a lot of them could have career years. I mean, you saw that in tenfold in 22, 23 with the Devils. I mean, guys like Dougie Hamilton were even having career years, and that's the guy that he already got his money, right? He already got his big paycheck, so he's not. That's not some, you know, upstart rookie trying to, you know, make his name. No, this is these are guys that are proven veterans that are having career years.
I went back and looked the exact date he was fired, March 4th. It came on the heels of, it looks like, a 5-1 loss to the L.A. Kings, but they're actually still over 500. They were 30-27, it looks like, was their record at that point. Like, what led to it? What was the ultimate demise of why the actual firing happened? We know that they were kind of underperforming. Was it just that? Were there anything specific? Was there something that was going on?
There were a couple things. I mean, you look at the homestand they had before that, and we all know even though Sabres were in it, right? This awful, mediocre mess of a wild card situation that now has the Washington Capitals playing the New York Rangers at a minus 37 goal differential. There were so many golden opportunities for the Devils this year to pounce on, you know, games where they could be tied with Detroit for the second wild card spot, right? And it was, oh, man, this is the biggest game of the season. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've written, oh, man, this is the biggest game of the season for the Devils this year. And almost every single time, they wouldn't pounce on those chances, right? And this is, I'm talking golden platters, like, you know, ready for the taking for them. And New Jersey wouldn't pounce on them. And it was the inconsistencies there. It was, they hadn't won more than three. They hadn't gone on more than a three-game winning streak at all this season. Their highest was three, and I think the last time they did it was late November, one of those. So I think Tom Fitzgerald, the GM for New Jersey, I think he just got tired of the inconsistencies there between, you know, there were some interesting media antics from our end too, you know, and a lot of that might just be conjecture and Lindy trying to, you know, say, hey, look over here. Don't look at the product that's happening on the ice, where, you know, he's blaming reporters for the power play struggles, a statement he would later walk back. There were instances too where, you know, a young player in Alexander Holtz was getting, you know, benched, and, you know, right after he would score a goal, and Lindy said to me in a press conference that I don't watch the game very well. And there were instances like that all throughout that, you know, it spoke to, hey, something's coming to a head here. This team that won a franchise record amount of games last year is now spiraling and can't win more than three games in a row. Something's got to give, and there needs to be a new voice. And didn't really work out for the Devils and their new voice, but, you know, I think a change was definitely needed.
How much of the, do I want to call it a narrative? I don't know. We've heard a lot recently, just even if it's just mentioned in passing, that Andrew Burnett had a lot to do with their success last year, being on their bench, and then he leaves, and, you know, the Devils, you pointed out the injuries, but their success went down. How much truth do you think there is? How much credence do you think there is to Burnett was making a huge impact on that bench, and that Lindy wasn't the same when he wasn't there?
You know, I go back and forth on it myself, but there's no doubt anything that Andrew Burnett touches, I mean, he's the Midas man. Anything he touches turns to gold. I mean, you see every single place that he's gone, they've had success. Now, in Florida, you look at it and you were like, okay, talented roster, anyone probably could have done well there in the interim. But no, then he goes to New Jersey, and I know for a fact that the players really responded well to him. I mean, great communicator. His power play wasn't as great as, you know, as it should have been, given, you know, the talented bevy of scorers they have on that roster. But I think in that room, he was a big voice. Now, that's not to take away what Lindy did. I mean, Lindy squeezed a lot of potential out of these guys. I mean, he's a good developer of some of these young superstars. I just kind of wish that it was a little bit more consistent throughout, right? You know, you see some of the guys this year that kind of, I think, responded well, maybe to Burnett. One guy, Dawson Mercer, who, you know, he had a breakout career year last season, and this year he kind of goes away with 30 points. Now, 20 goals, but, you know, he goes away with, you know, 30 points. It's not exactly the best kind of thing, especially after he have a career year. Again, I think that Burnett absolutely added something to that group that, you know,
kind of flies under the radar, although a lot of people are bringing it up now. But I don't think that he was the end all. Like, I don't think that's to take away from the experience and the voice that Lindy had. I think Lindy definitely had a big part in some of these guys having careers, of which, you know, it was most of the roster last year.
And Ryan, when Lindy comes to Buffalo, the big talk is accountability, accountability. Like, the players are, hey, we need accountability. Don Granato was a really nice coach to get him to a certain level, but Kevin Adams said more accountability. What's interesting is in New Jersey, wasn't there talk of the GM being upset at maybe how he was holding guys accountable so much? It's almost like what he was doing in New Jersey, we want to have in Buffalo, but it didn't work in New Jersey because he was too hard on them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I'll go back to the Devils needing a new voice. That's kind of the overall crux of it. However, I think that, as I mentioned before, there you need to have consistency in your accountability, right? I think a lot of time you see with some of these veteran coaches that I'm not going to say they kind of pick and choose who they're accountable for and who they're not, but you know, there's a point where, okay, you're not going to help me scratch a Jack Hughes or whatever, unless your name is John Tortorella. but I mean, as I mentioned too, like some of the stats that Lindy and I had got into press conferences and whatnot were about, you know, a player in Alexander Holtz who, again, he would score a goal and then he would get benched. He would score the game time goal. I forget which, I think it was against the Canadiens earlier in the year. And then he would get benched in the third period. Lindy would kind of shorten the bench. And it's like, listen, I know that, you know, like, and Lindy referenced it and said, oh, he made a mistake in the second period. Well, that goal happened in the early of the third period, and you're benching him, almost retroactively benching him, right, for a mistake he made in the second. I just wish, I think what needs to happen in Buffalo is you don't want to run into a situation where there's inconsistency in some of the things, right? If Tase Thompson's being inconsistent, you know, not to say you're going to bench him, but, and, you know, you don't want to bench like a Zach Benson, right? Like, you know, like you want to let him cook. I think my message to Lindy is you got to maybe let these younger guys cook, you know, and because I think that they're the game is changing where you can have guys that are 18, 19 years old come in and have an impact right away. And I think with this Buffalo team, how many draft picks they've had in recent years and how young they are, you got to let some of these guys cook a little bit in order to get, you know, the most out of their development track.
Yeah.
And I hope we do see that in Buffalo. I hope we do.
You're definitely giving me memories of, I mean, again, Sabre teams of 10, 15 years ago where there are veterans that will have a bad shift and not see the bench, and then a young player does, and like you won't see him for a half hour. And I guess you kind of said it though, right? Like the higher level players, he will still throw out there because the Devils had the second youngest team in the league. He's coming to the team that has the youngest roster in the sport before the offseason, at least. So, you know, I'm sure he knows what he's got and what he's getting into. He's not going to be a guy that's going to hate all young guys.
No, yeah, no doubt. I mean, listen, like his hand was almost forced this year, too. Because Dougie Hamilton went down with an injury, he almost had to trust, you know, some of the young guys, especially on the blue line. And, you know, and I kind of understand it. You know, your blue line's depleted. There was numerous injuries in that unit this year. So you can't really go ahead and say, oh, I'm going to bench X player, you know, X defenseman, but I'm going to treat this fourth line winger that we're trying to develop, you know, a little differently. So I kind of understand it in a way. But, you know, if you think about it, too, there's going to be instances where, yeah, someone's going to need accountability. And I think Lindy will do that. But I don't think it's uniform across the board. I think he does put trust in the young players. And in New Jersey and now in Buffalo, he's going to have no choice but to trust some of these younger guys, right? That's just the nature of the business and the way that roster is built right now. And I'll tell you what, guys, one thing I do want to mention too, I don't think that that we're talking about enough how revitalized he'll be, how recharged he'll be by going back to Buffalo. I could tell you guys stories, so many stories about how many times he's referenced the Bills, how many, you know, press conferences Monday nights where he would say, oh, hey, let's keep this short. The Bills are playing soon. You know, like I think he's going to be recharged there.
Yeah. No,
well,
no
I will tell you, I'll tell you this. I saw him on the sidelines when the Bills played the Eagles that weekend. Him and his family, they were there. Yeah, they were at the game. Yeah, he was on the field, on the sidelines before the game, pregame. I've gotten to know Lindy over the years here in Buffalo, here and there a little bit. I know a lot of the media. He came in yesterday, Ryan, and he said, the real reason I came back is I missed Paul Hamilton and Mike Harrington, referencing some media people. I mean, you know, it's kind of a love fest here that's going on between him and the city. And yes, he has owned it. He said it. He's owned his house here since 1979. He never moved away. His son, by the way, still works for the organization. He's in the hockey department, Brett Ruff. So yeah, this is obviously something that we're very familiar with. The other thing that he's familiar with is, as Joe pointed out, a young team. He mentioned this roster reminds him of what he had in New Jersey. Do you see it that way from an outsider looking in at the Sabres roster? Do you see a lot of similarities there?
I see a ton. You know, you have a good mix of veterans on that team. You have Tuck. I'm blanking on some of the other ones right now. But you have guys that are seasoned enough, right? Like, I think Tage Thompson is seasoned enough to where, okay, he gets it. He gets how to play in the NHL. Now, you know, I think he was also playing through some injuries this year, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep,
so
yep.
I think you'll see a bounce back from him. I think you could see a new life under a guy like Tuck, who was really, you know, champing at the bit, right, to play for Lindy. He talked about it in his exit interviews. I think you're going to see mixes of people that, you know, you have the similarities in New Jersey. You have that run-and-gun style. You have that really, you know, prolific offensive team that, you know, even under Granato last year, you saw instances where they were, you know, you saw Tage Thompson's career year last year. I mean, it was ridiculous. I think Lindy can unlock some of that potential with some of these guys. Now, the part for him that's going to get them over the top, that's going to, you know, hopefully get Buffalo back into the playoff run, is if Lindy can learn from his past mistakes and, again, be consistent with the accountability, one. And two, I mean, hire a defensive guru you know, if the defensive coach there is a defensive guru, like, really be sure to have that structure. I mean, kind of rework, you know, use all these assets at your disposal, Lindy, and really make sure that there's structure with that team. Because a structured Lindy Ruff team can be a really good team. We saw it in New Jersey two seasons ago, and I think you can see it if he implements that in Buffalo.
Yeah, well, my thought on that, Ryan, is looking at the center position especially. Like, I think the biggest reason, maybe the number one reason, that the Sabres didn't make the playoffs this year is both their number one and number two centers didn't meet expectations. Like, they both regressed in big ways. They're older, but just watching the Devils over the years, again, I don't know what percent you'd want to credit to Lindy. I know it wouldn't be zero, it wouldn't be 100, but it does feel like once he got there that Hughes and Hischier just kind of hit the next level.
Yeah, I always think about that too. I'm thinking, like, okay, these are two number one overall picks. Were they going to, you know, surge anyway, or is it that Lindy is a good whisperer of young talent? I think it's a little bit of both. Like you mentioned, it's definitely not 100% Lindy's, you know, doing, but it's also, you know, like, he definitely had a say in it, right? I think Lindy, what I'll give him credit for is that he is good at tapping into the young superstar talents, right? Getting them to unlock a lot of that. And maybe a lot of that, too, is the guys that he's, you know, coaching up, especially Jack Hughes, that's a really offensive-minded kind of guy. Really, you know, gels in Lindy's system. Now, what needs to, you know, be finer-tuned about that is, you know, that the defensive side of things just needs a little bit of fine tuning, right? Like, I think if he can find a way to gel both of those aspects, to gel, okay, you get the offensive surge, but maybe be a little bit more careful with the puck and things like that. And also, you know, having that strong 200 foot game, I think Lindy kind of unlocked a lot of that with some of these players to the point where, like, Jesper Bratt, who's now a superstar and was a 6th round pick, he's now getting penalty kill minutes. I mean, you would think that Jesper Bratt, okay, this is just kind of an offensive guru. No, like, he's developing his 200-foot game. Nico Hischier is obviously a Selke, a perennial Selke kind of candidate. You know, Lindy's going to do a good job at unlocking some of these guys' potential. It's just a matter of, can I keep it consistent? And I think, you know, maybe it's a coin toss to see if he can.
Before we let you go, Ryan, you're right there in the thick, the tri-state area. Rangers 2-0 on the Capitals right now in their series. Islanders with the collapse the other night, of course, down 2-0 to Carolina. It looks like they're on a collision course. How do you see the East playing out? And obviously with the Rangers, we know about Chris Drury here. We know about Mike Pekka behind their bench as an assistant coach. Like, how do you see all of this kind of playing out, even with, you know, Boston and Toronto as well?
We always talk about how much of a bloodbath that Western Conference bracket is, and it is. Mm-hmm. I think the fascinating thing to me is how this East is going to shake out. Who's going to be the one playing against one of those behemoths seemingly in the West? Now, I think Rangers kind of have, you know, an easy series wins here. I think Carolina, you know, they're just kind of one of those upstart kind of energy playoff hockey kind of teams that forechecks hard and just has skill throughout. And they're playing for a lot this year. There's going to be a lot of tough decisions in Carolina this offseason with a lot of their guys expiring. I think they went all in. They, you know, mended their goaltending situation a little bit, and a lot of that was just circumstance, just happened. I like Carolina in the East, but any number of these teams, I think, can make it. That Boston and Toronto series, too, I think that's going to go seven games, and each game you're going to say, oh, man, Boston's going to, you know, take this one. Toronto's going to take this one and win out, but it's just going to end up going seven and probably overtime.
Yeah. Really quick before I let you go, because we had been doing coach search stuff for it was only a week. You know, they hired Lindy pretty quickly here. But when Craig Berube would come up as a potential idea for the Sabres, I know because I've read it out there that he wants to be closer to his family in Philadelphia. I had always been thinking about him for the Devils, but I guess I also don't know if they're just going to keep Travis Green.
I want Craig Berube in New Jersey. I think he'd be perfect for them. I think he's the kind of guy that would instill a full stop kind of accountability for them and really, you know, he's one of those spark plug kind of coaches that I think this Devils team could use a little more structure. There's enough connections there within the organization. I mean, you look at Jake Allen, the goaltender, he played for St. Louis. I mean, I'm sure even Marty knows him too from his brief time and then, you know, time in St. Louis's front office. I think Berube would be a slam dunk hire for this Devils team. You know, Travis Green, you know, for all of his accountability and Fitzgerald preached about that, the record got worse, right? And all the advanced metrics that you look at, except for the goaltending stats, which Lindy didn't really benefit from, every advanced metric under Travis Green went down. And again, except for the goaltending, and the record was worse. So I don't think Green is exactly the slam dunk hire by any means. And I would love Berube. And, you know, being close to Philadelphia, you're right there, man.
Ryan, this was amazing. Great conversation. We appreciate it. And we'll reach out to you again because this was really cool. And we love talking hockey here in Buffalo, even on draft week. So it's really cool. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Gentlemen, please do. Thank you very much for having me.
You got it. Ryan Novosinski covers the Devils for the New Jersey Star Ledger. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Paul Hamilton was at the press conference yesterday. What are his takeaways from what Lindy Ruff had to say? Great stuff from Ryan right there.
I just want to thank you all, and I'm just going to reiterate again, super excited, and I might just add this, I've missed Paul Hamilton and Mike Harrington, and that's the reason I'm back.
I love it. I was listening to that live, and when it happened, when he said it, put a smile on my face, and I'm sure it made you chuckle a little bit as well, Paul. Paul Hamilton joins us here on the Wester Hotline. It's brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Paul is, that is, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. You know, I mean, hey, I know you've seen Lindy over the last several years, many years, and when he's back in town, talk to him. But here you go again, Paul. Kind of a really interesting scenario to be covering a guy that you covered for so long, you got to know so well.
Yeah, he doesn't mind having a little fun along the way too. So which is fun, you know. Why when I'm at first question, I ask him a serious question to start, and then the second question was, he'll never give you the goalie, and we kind of make jokes about it. You know, who's the goalie today or whatever? So that was my question. And question number two is, who's your goalie on opening night? And he actually said.
He gave you it. Yeah, he gave you the goalie.
Okay, let me start there then for both of you. By him saying UPL, I mean, I was a little surprised he didn't say, you know, we have two really good goalies here in UPL and Devin Levi. Can't wait to work with Devin. What did he give you any insight into anything with that answer, Paul?
Yeah, a little bit. And later on, he talked about having two good young goalies, you know. But, you know, as far as Devin Levi goes, can the Sabres do what the Bruins do? You know, one goalie had 44 games, the other had 40, and they both played one game in the playoffs. Is that something the Sabres could do with Levi and Lukanen? We don't know. I mean, Levi's doing great in Rochester. 13-2-1, the Amerks are, you know, in their last 16 games. They put him in net. They made it his team. And he came up a couple of times, too, and performed well in the couple of times he was up in the NHL. You know, he had shown quite a bit of improvement. But I think this is so good for him that they sent him down there and said, this is your team, and take it as far as you can. You know, you're not going to play much if you stay up in Buffalo, so there's really no point. We want you to play games. This is your – and he's embraced it, you know, and has played very, very well. They went from almost falling out of the playoffs to a tie for first place and lost by one regulation win. Otherwise, they would have went – they would have been the number one seed and in first place in the division. So – that's how tight it is. They start, by the way, on Friday in Rochester, but the top two teams, Cleveland and Rochester, are tied in third place. 1 point behind is Syracuse, who Rochester now will play.
Yeah. I think that would be expected, right, Paul? That, like, Lukanen, Levi, it's not to say he couldn't, over the course of next year, earn more and more playing time or even more than UPL at some point, but the season Lukanen just had, like, you got to give him the right, I think, to be the guy going into next year. Assuming they work out a contract, which I feel like I am safe in assuming.
Yeah, and you know he's got to go into camp the number one goaltender. He's earned it. He's absolutely earned it. And I know there's another coach, but Mike Bales is still here, and you know he's earned it. Now that doesn't mean Devin Levi can't earn playing time by having a great camp, as I said, to where. You know, a lot of people have said, well, what could they get for Levi? And yeah, you could go that route, but I don't know. In today's NHL, you pretty much need two goalies. You know, it's not too many goalies that play as much as Hellebuck does. And, you know, Vasilevsky.
Right.
You know, it's a good idea to have two good goalies if you can have it. So I would not be looking to trade either one of them. And, you know, we'll see where Levi falls when he comes into camp. Will he just be a backup goaltender where Lukanen gets 50 games and Levi gets 20-some-odd games or 30 games? You know, would that be the scenario? Or would they alternate? Or would they send him back to Rochester if he's not quite ready? Because, you know, we've seen a couple of games, and he's, to me, shown improvement. But, you know, we'll see where he goes with this playoff run.
All right, Paul, let's get back to the events of yesterday. I said to Joe earlier, and Bulldog said this as well yesterday, that the Sabres seem to have one very consistent message about this hire, which is this is not about the past. And they've not even said, welcome back, Lindy Ruff. And whenever you look at it, it says, welcome, Lindy Ruff. That's something Bulldog, you know, and Shope and Bulldog both kind of noticed. Shope, I think, noticed that, and I think it's a really great observation. How about yesterday and how it was treated and Lindy and anything that was said about him being a part of the organization, nostalgia, what Terry said, what Kevin said, and just that theme of, hey, we're not doing this because of what he meant to the past. We're doing this because of what he means to the future.
And Kevin Adams seems very touchy about it. It was in his statement before they had the press conference. I think he referred to it at least twice, maybe three times during the press conference. And he doesn't want people to think that's what happened. So, you know, he's kind of got out in front of it, so to speak, and said, you know, look at that. Even when we were talking about, you know, he was on Lindy Ruff's staff. He was a development coach for 2 years and then an assistant coach for two. And, you know, so I wanted to know how much, you know, being in the room with Lindy Ruff as a coach, as an assistant under him, how much did, you know, he think about that and use that while he was making a decision? And he admitted it was partly part of it, but at the end he goes, but that wasn't it. He goes, that's not why he's the next coach here. And then he went back to, you know, the what you're referring to. So he's very touchy about it, and he doesn't want there to be any mistake in his mind of what happened here.
What did you feel about how Lindy approached that and anything he talked about? He was a little bit more of the, hey, he mentioned you guys, those kinds of things. Like, it's not like they want to ignore it, right? You can't do that. Lindy Ruff's been here. But just about his kind of journey to get back to this point and what he said about coming back to Buffalo and why he did it and why he's here.
Well, he took it way back. As he said, he's lived in the city since 1979.
Yep, that's right.
You know, so that's all the way back to the year he was drafted. So, you know, that's when he wanted to talk about how great the city is and how great the fans are. And he wants his players to experience what he's experienced from these fans, where you beat the Philadelphia Flyers in the playoffs 8-0, or you get huge overtime goals to win a game, and the building was shaking. You know, they're sitting in the locker room, and the building is actually shaking around them. I know I've had conversations with Danny Briere about that, to a point where he was a little bit worried about his safety sitting in there. You know, so, you know, those are the types of things that Lindy Ruff wants this group to experience.
In terms of his style, Paul, I feel like from how he talked, like they're not dialing back on wanting to score. They're just going to want, you know, to be more buttoned up when they are not, you know, in the offensive zone.
Yeah, that was a myth when Lindy Ruff coached here, that he was a defensive coach. He got kind of stuck with that. And Lindy Ruff is very good, in my opinion, of doing something that Don Granato didn't, and that's playing a style that fits your team. You know, back when he had Dominic Hasek, you know, he had guys that could score big goals for them. But really, if you think about it, Miroslav Šetin was really his only goal scorer. He had 40 goals. But when the playoffs rolled around, when Dominic Hasek wasn't as good as he was in the regular season, they were able to win because they would get a big goal from Dixon Ward. I mean, Dixon Ward scored big playoff goals for this team. Or they'd get a big goal from Michael Pekka, or somebody maybe hadn't even heard of that would step up and score a big goal for them. And that's kind of how they rolled. So, yeah, they were more defensive when they had Dominic Hasek in goal. And, yes, they had Ryan Miller in goal, but they also had Chris Drury and Danny Briere and Thomas Vanek and guys that could put the puck in the net. So now you're going to play a little bit different that way when you've got guys that are big goal scorers and can help you and put the puck in the net and score very big playoff goals. I forgot to mention Max Afinogenoff too in that group. So, you know, he can develop a style for any way his team is set up.
Paul Hamilton on the West Hur Hotline. All right, Paul, well, guess what? You take a breath now, because now it's draft time, and I know you got stuff still you're going to be covering with the Sabres, but the coach search is over. Lindy Ruff is here. Now we go to the NFL draft. You got a pick? You got anybody you want to throw out there? What do you think the Bills are going to do?
Well, now this is the time of year where I hang out with you a little bit. You know, when
there
we're
you
out,
go, buddy. That's
when
right.
We're out one Bills drive, you know, we're both out yep. there, and it gets me a little bit on top of the football team then, because, of course, I can't be out there a lot during the season, so a lot of my knowledge and everything that I get is being out there in May and June and July and training camp and when it's really yep. going. So that'll be fun. And, yeah, I think definitely wide receiver. I don't have any names. I'm not going to sit here and sure. lie to you and say I watch any more than Iowa State football, because that's basically what I watch. So I can't give you a bunch of names, but I do know by listening to you folks that this is a very huge wide receiver, you know, a lot of very good wide receivers. I was listening earlier, and I would agree with you, you know, with what Brandon Bean usually does. It wouldn't shock me in the least to see him move up to get one of those wide receivers, because I think it's essential. Yes, they got Dalton Kincaid, and I think he's going to be even better than what we saw as a rookie. I'm really high on Dalton Kincaid, but you still need more than him. And I like Khalil, and, you know, he's fine, but I still think you need more.
I love it. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you, and I'm sure that we'll still be in contact and talking about the Buffalo Sabres over the next several weeks, and obviously leading through the playoffs and up to the draft and free agency. Thanks, buddy.
Sounds great. Take care.
All right, you got it. Paul Hamilton there on the West Hur Hotline. All right, Joe. Well, I am so dialed into what the Bills are doing, obviously, but I have to tell you, very, very interested right now in the top of the draft board and the quarterbacks. There's been a lot of talk. Some teams now, I'm reading some stuff. The Giants are a really interesting team. I'm going to read you something about the Giants when we come back. And also, is it really possible the Bills could go up and get Rome Odunze? We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Okay, a couple quick items as we head on out of here today. Joe, breaking news. Amon-Ra St. Brown contract extension. 4 years, $120 million for Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Wow. Yeah.
Think about if you're going to trade for Brandon Ayuk, what it's going to cost in assets and in money. It's just, it's tough to deal with.
I will say, though, the Bills are set up for that extension. Like, they when they cleared their space, it was for the future. And usually how those contracts work is it's easier to stomach in the first year or two, and then the third, fourth, fifth year, it gets tougher. But the Bills cleared a lot of that out this offseason.
I wanted to talk about, you know, how far they could get up to get Roma Dunze, but we could do that tomorrow, because I'm going to post later today, WGR550.com. Look out for it. I've done some research on what teams would be most likely that could want to move out of their spots in the Bills draft and trade up with them, and why, who the target would be, and how much it would cost the Bills. So look out for that. In the meantime, real quickly on quarterbacks, Dan Graziano at ESPN says the Giants actually are they really like Drake May, and they'd like to get to the number three pick, but they also could stay at six and take Michael Penix.
Okay, but they would. That they're in the market no matter what is definitely interesting. Sure, go to three. I don't want New England. I like Drake May, so I don't want New England getting him. And the Giants getting him, that would also maybe give Brian Daboll a little extra breathing room. Doesn't have to.
Maybe.
The season went horribly, but if you go 8-9 or 7-10 with Daniel Jones as your quarterback, I think you very well could get fired. If you go 8-9 with Drake May, and he makes steps along the way, like, you're more likely, I think, to be back as head coach.
Yeah, let me read you real quickly here what it says from Dan Graziano, which is really interesting. The last part of this blurb says, there's a lot of chatter flying around, but what is clear is that the Giants have done significant work on the quarterbacks and are very open, if not desperate, uses the word desperate, Joe, to come out on Thursday night with one of them.
Wow.
So there you go.
Love it.
I mean, I think if that is true, obviously it tells you what they feel or don't feel about, you know, Daniel Jones' future. All right, tomorrow for the NFL draft, we are wall-to-wall coverage all day long, of course. Then when the draft starts, well, it starts at 8, but our coverage starts at 7 from One Bills Drive. That's where I'll be. You're going to have Nate Geary, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, TJ Luckman, Joe Calley. Everybody's going to be on board here, all hands on deck. We got you covered. We're one day away, folks. Sabres Live is up next. They'll recap yesterday's press conference. One Bills Live after that, then show up with the Bulldog. Enjoy your Wednesday on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.